Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Migraine affects many aspects of our life and health, but what exactly is a migraine and why is it called that? Isn't it simply just a bad headache? Well, as one that experiences them, no, it isn't. If you've experienced one yourself, though, or you've been with somebody who has, then you will understand that it's not just a headache, but something more debilitating. Joining me on the line now is Una Farrell from the Migraine Trust to explain more. Good evening, Una.
Hi, Clive.
Thank you for joining me. Una, first of all, let's get to the bottom of this. What is a migraine and what exactly causes it?
Well, a migraine, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. It's not a headache. And also, people have migraine attacks. So 1 in 7 people have migraine. So migraine is a lifelong condition that you have migraine attacks episodically during your life. So It's not a case of someone having a migraine, it's a migraine attack. You either have the condition or you don't. And as 1 in 7 people have it, any listeners who are listening at the moment, they will know that it has a massive impact on your life. It is incredibly painful, it's incredibly debilitating. And we don't know why people have migraine, but we do know there is a genetic link. So it's likely, if you have migraine, it's likely that one of your parents will have it. But there are triggers for migraine attacks. And that can be, if a lifestyle change, such as if you're working shifts and the timing changes, that can trigger migraine attacks. Or dehydration, or stress can be a trigger as well, or alcohol. So while we don't know why people get migraine, we do know there are certain triggers for attacks.
Right. So, there's no sort of, as you say, particular cause for it. I had my first one when I was about 13 or 14, and it sort of frightened me a bit, and my parents didn't really understand, and they were quite dismissive about it. But it's something, as you say, it's something that you have. You won't sort of stop having them. They won't sort of go away. You will have them again at various repeated points in your life then. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you'll be prone to them. So the patterns of migraine attacks change through most people's lives. And for example, for women, women who have migraine tend to have more attacks during their 30s and 40s, particularly at the perimenopausal phase. And for a lot of women, they'll actually stop having migraine attacks after their menopause. So not for all, but for many. So they do change in frequency and severity of symptoms over your life, but it is a case of you're either prone to them or you're not.
And I assume there isn't a test that can be done to identify whether one is prone to them.
No, it's just a case of identifying the symptoms. So, for example, the main symptom is pain in the face and the head, but it can also be nausea. It can be about a quarter of people who have migraine have a thing called aura, and the most common characteristic of that is a visual disturbance.
Oh, that's the one I get.
Takes place just before the pain stage of a migraine attack, but it could also be like a tingling in the face, and that can last for 15 minutes, an hour. But about a quarter of people have that particular characteristic of migraine.
That one is particularly horrible. I mean, all kinds of migraines are horrible, to be fair, but that one is, to me, because you can't predict when it's going to happen, and thankfully it's infrequent, but I always worry that it happens when I'm in the car, because if it does, I just have to pull over and just, rest up for a bit. But I feel like I want to release a pressure valve of steam from my head as well. That's another sort of effect with that. I don't get pain as such, but I just feel that my head is under pressure kind of thing. Very weird.
Yeah, it is, and it can be very hard to explain to people who don't have migraine what it's like. And most people get headaches. That's very common. And the problem can be that people think, just because they've had headaches, that they think a migraine is just a slightly worse version of that. But it's a bad headache, and it's not. It's a whole body experience. Mm-hmm. That, for example, there's a thing called hemiplegic migraine where you can feel numb and half of your body, or there's a thing called vestibular migraine where you have vertigo with it. So it's a complex condition,
and
it's a neurological condition. It's a disease that people have.
Well, I never. What's the best treatment for migraines? Because I assume migraines can affect all, you know, all ages and, you know, all defined genders. But, you know, what's the best treatment for it?
It totally depends. So, for example, if you have episodic migraine, so that's if your migraine attacks, the frequency is less than 15 a month. I'll explain what chronic migraine is. So chronic migraine is where you have 15 headache days a month, 8 of which are migrainous. So anything less than that, then you have episodic migraine. And it can still be very frequent. So you can have 6 migraine attacks a month, but you still wouldn't be considered chronic. Right. And for people who are episodic, the treatment is usually acute medication. So that's medication you take once your migraine attack has started. And the most common treatment for that are the triptans. So and that's a group of drugs. The most best known is sumatriptan. And they were developed about 25 years ago. And that was a big breakthrough in terms of migraine treatment, because they were the first drugs that were developed specifically to treat migraine acutely. And then in terms of preventive medication, so that would be if you have chronic migraine, you would probably take a preventive medication. Up until a few years ago, the drugs that were available for you were drugs that were repurposed. So they had been developed for other conditions, and it was discovered that there was an impact in migraine. So it was beta blockers, it was antidepressants, and a range of other drugs. And the effectiveness was quite mixed, and also the side effect, there were some quite bad side effects, such as weight gain and foggy thinking, that people would feel that they actually couldn't think clearly. So there was a massive breakthrough in migraine treatment for preventives about 3-4 years ago. It was a group of drugs known as the calcitonin gene-related peptide antibody group of drugs. And there are several drugs in this class of drugs that have been going through the process whereby they would be approved for use on the NHS. So now, in the past year, there are several of these drugs that have been approved for the use on the NHS. It's a huge thing. So the first preventive that was developed specifically to treat migraine, which have been very effective for people, many people with chronic migraine, and also the side effect profile is very positive as well.
But for people who get them infrequently and may not be taking any routine medication, what's the best thing to do? Because as I was saying, for me, I have the aura then. All I have to do is just sort of rest up in a dark room and just wait, as you say, about half an hour to an hour, and it passes. But not everybody can do that. If it happens at work or you're out shopping or something like that, what's the best thing to do?
I think it totally depends on the individual. It totally depends on the frequency of your attacks, the severity of your attacks. Some people absolutely have to lie down and go to a dark room if they're having a migraine attack. Some people don't. So I think you have to talk to your healthcare professional about it. But it's also about if you're taking other medication that could impact on what you would take. If you're thinking of becoming pregnant, just generally your general situation, and also just the frequency of the attack. So it totally depends. I would say for acute medication, the most common medication that people take is one of the triptans, but it could be just a painkiller. But that it does depend. So I wouldn't want to say. But all I will say is, in terms of migraine treatment, there has been a massive breakthrough in terms of preventive treatment over the past few years, which is great news for people with migraine. But in terms of acute medication, the triptan group is probably the most commonly taken.
Can they do any long term damage to the brain?
No, they don't, and that's something that people. You know, many people with migraine say they feel that it's actually damaging their brain. No, they don't. But they do long-term damage to people's lives in terms of impacting their relationships, impacting their mental health, impacting their ability to work. And that's why it's really, really important to get help if you're struggling with migraine.
Now, certain foods can trigger migraines, can't they?
Well, that's an interesting one, because there's a myth that chocolate and cheese often trigger migraine attacks. And for some people that might be, but for many people, they think they're triggering their migraine attacks when they're not. And I'll explain why. Because a migraine attack has several stages, and the first stage is the premonitory stage, and that lasts about 24 hours. And that's when you might feel a tightness in your head, and you might have symptoms such as yawning, tiredness, thirst. So you're not in pain, but your migraine attack has actually started. You also have cravings. Well, not everyone, but you might have cravings. So therefore, you might have cheese or chocolate. And then there's the aura stage, which I talked about, which about a quarter of people get. But then there's the pain stage. And that's when most people think they're having a migraine attack, but they don't realize the actual attack had started about 24 hours beforehand. So they associate, they think, oh, well, I had chocolate or I had cheese, and that's what caused the migraine attack. And it's not. So that's why it's really important to understand that there are different stages to a migraine attack. And for about 24 hours before the pain stage, you're in the premonitory stage. And a lot of people with migraine, once they hear about this, it makes sense. They think, actually, I was yawning, or I felt I was about to have a migraine attack. People say that. Well, actually, no, the attack has started. It's just you're not in the pain stage. So that, therefore, many people give up chocolate when they don't need to. They actually think it was triggering migraine attacks when it wasn't. But having said that, there are a few people who it will. But it's that's why I would encourage anyone who has migraine to start have a diary so that they start recording symptoms, frequency, what they've been eating, the weather. Weather can trigger people's migraine attacks, particularly changes in the weather. So just to try and understand your own migraine. So therefore, when you do go to a doctor, it can help them help you because they'll have more knowledge in helping you manage your migraine.
I mean, for me, I can only speak from personal experience, but for me, mine are very, very infrequent, thankfully, touch wood. And as I said, I don't take anything for it. I just go and lie down and let it pass and you know, and it seems to sort itself out. But I think you have to judge each one on its merits from what you've been saying. And then, you know, as you say, keep that diary. And if it becomes very frequent, then that's the time to seek medical intervention.
Absolutely. And if you feel that your doctor isn't taking your migraine seriously, as you mentioned that you felt your migraine was dismissed, you know, when you were a child, go to another doctor, because there's some absolutely fantastic doctors who can help people with migraine. But unfortunately, there's still quite a lack of knowledge and understanding about migraine, and lack of understanding about the impact it has on people. So seek help. And if you don't feel that your migraine's been taken seriously, you look elsewhere. But also the Migraine Trust, we can help.
Well,
we have a website that has a range of information, and we've got a helpline that I'd encourage people to call.
Well, I'll come on to that in a second, but I do want to know more about the work of the Migraine Trust. Tell me about what you do.
We do three main things. So we give people information and support. So we have a website, which I'll just give the address, migrainetrust.org, and that has information about migraine, its symptoms, the different stages of a migraine attack. So if anyone listening wants to know more about that, go to our website. But also there's information about different treatments, about how to manage migraine in work, how to get help from a doctor, how to manage migraine in education, because these are places where migraine can have a massive impact, and where particularly when it comes to healthcare, where you need help and you need to be able to get the right help. So we do that, and we organise informational events where people can learn more about migraine. But then we also campaign for increased awareness and changes in, for example, in the healthcare system. This week we brought out a report that identified some problems in the healthcare system in terms of diagnosis. So many people, they go to their doctor with, talking about some of the symptoms that they have for their migraine, but it often can take years for them to actually be diagnosed with migraine, but also in terms of access to specialists and new treatments that particularly people with chronic migraine might need. And then also we fund research and we support research. So, for example, we fund a PhD at the moment, and we will be funding a fellowship next year. But also every 2 years, we organise a symposium in London where we bring together the world's leading migraine researchers and clinicians, where we discuss the recent research and discuss, look at trends and then think about what research needs to be done going forward.
Tell me about the events, Una, that have been organised by the Migraine Trust for Migraine Awareness Week.
So we, in terms of events, we had we'd organised a Managing Your Migraine event last Saturday. So before the pandemic, our Managing Your Migraine events took place offline. So people, probably about 100 people would come along, and the event would last for about 3 or 4 hours, where we would have migraine members, migraine trust staff talking about migraine, how to manage it. But we'd also have clinicians talking about different aspects of migraine. So it could be, there could be a focus on women and migraine, mm-hmm. particularly in terms of the perimenopause and the menopause. So we do events where you can meet members of the migraine trust team, but also clinicians, and just learn more about and ask questions about particular aspects of migraine. But since the pandemic, we've been organising these events online because, like many people, we've actually discovered you can reach more people this way, and it's not just limited to one location. So that has been wonderful, actually. And also, in terms of migraine, because you never know when you're going to have a migraine attack. So we'd organise an event, and then people might not be able to turn up in the morning because they're having a migraine attack. Whereas actually, if it's online over Zoom, it's easier for someone who living with migraine to attend, because even if they're struggling with it, you know, maybe not in the pain stage of a migraine attack, but if they're premonitory or postdrome, which is the stage of a migraine attack after the pain stage, they might be able to take part. So that's been wonderful. So we will be organising more events over the next year. So again, go to our website, migrainetrust.org, and you'll be able to find out about the latest events.
Una Farrell from the Migraine Trust, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive.
Thank you, Clive.
That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.